Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Welcome to the Strategies for the Art House Industry in the Post-Pandemic Era panel. The themes are recovery through innovation and diversity. My name is Nick Vivarelli. I'm a reporter for Variety. We're going to have a keynote speech via Zoom by Maria Silvia Gatta, who's the policy officer for Creative Europe Media, the European Commission's Creative Europe Media. And the speakers today are Christian Brouwer, president of CICAE, Matthias Wouter-Knoll, director of the European Film Academy, Sonia Chung, deputy director of Film Forum, and Bruno Zambardino, who's head of European Affairs and its Italy movies of the Italian General Directorate for Film, who's also a representative of IFAD, the funding body. And then we're going to have closing remarks from Salima Yenbu, who's member of the European Parliament's Committee on Culture and Education. Basically, as I think we all know, we've been through a pandemic that has taken its toll on art house cinema going. And we're starting, I think, to see a few signs of the light of the end of, at the end of the tunnel. Meanwhile, what happened during the pandemic, there were some societal changes that were in the U.S. prompted by the killing of George Floyd that sort of reverberated around the world, and there has been a push for more diversity and inclusion. And these are basically the two themes of the panel. Ways of getting people to go back to the movies, and ways of including and pushing for more diversity and inclusion, both within the movies and possibly even within the movie theaters. Those are basically the themes. So without any further ado, I'm going to ask the hookup with the Zoom for the keynote speech with Maria Silvia Gatta to begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. It's a great pleasure to be with you. And the first thing I want to share with you is the regret of Lucia not being able to address you on this very challenging topic of the post-COVID art house world. I just want to start by quoting what Commissioner Breton recognized this week in Lille at the Cérimania, that the pandemic is a moment of disruption in the way we perceived our role in the world. Clearly, the European Commission should take into the account in its dealings this historical conjuncture. And as you know, we have established a threefold policy for the audiovisual sector. First one is a regulatory action. The second one is financial support. And finally, a policy support for the transformation of the sector. Concerning the regulatory, of course, we have this enormous challenge of regulating the way platforms are intervening in the European audiovisual ecosystem. The second one is the financial support. As you know, the Creative Europe Media that has started this year in this new its new 7 years programming. And finally, the policy support with the Media and Audiovisual Action Plan. At the core of the Commission policy remains audience development. European works need to find their public, and the public creates, in return, the European film history and works and immense cultural capital. This preoccupation has driven our action since the outset of the, since the outburst of the crisis. As you remember, in March 2020, we were able to mobilize relatively for our standard, relatively quickly, some additional funds to support cinemas through the Our Europe Cinemas network. Of course, not enough, given the enormous clash of the crisis in the arts house sector. But to us, it was clear at the time that we needed to support cinemas because of the role they play in for the whole ecosystem. It was clear that, of course, in the context of the pandemic, the traditional cinema-going experience had to be readapted. And what we're looking at now is how to see how this readaptation that was obliged during the pandemic context will have to continue after, hopefully after this pandemic. And now that we have 18 months later, we're looking on how art house cinemas have been sort of in the front line of the experimentation that has been triggered, unfortunately, by the pandemic. And they really have thoroughly taken on board the technological and societal changes that this long-lasting closure of cinema theaters has brought about. There has been experiments at all levels, from virtual cinemas as well as cooperation with platforms. And these experiments have shown, firstly, that the ecosystem is working with a spirit of cooperation, and secondly, that exhibitors have been creative and innovative in embracing technological transformation in their business practices. This is something that perhaps could have happened without the tragic accelerator and catalyzer of a pandemic, but it's something that after 18 months we can look with some interest and proud. The concern behind these creative and innovative practices has been the preservation of public. Art house films and works, more than any other genre, really needs its publics and finds its publics in the theaters. Without a screen, there is no European film history, there is no European film language, as many of you pointed out in many of the exchanges we have had over the last 18 months. And this message we have received well. Yet, we need to move further. We need to imagine ways to preserve and develop a new form of cinema-going experience. This is vital to ensure that the sector is resilient to further crises. Uncertainty still prevails after 18 months, and we need to strengthen and consolidate based on the good experiments we have had over the last 18 months. The thing that in these months we have experienced is that audiences have experienced new fruition of films. These new practices have a technological and social component. We need to embrace all means of dissemination. This is an obliged path for the industry. At the same time, we need to make sure that the social dimension of the fruition of cinema and films remains preserved. And we need to re-encourage it. In this sense, I would like to remind you that even before the pandemic, the European Commission, encouraged by the European Parliament, has supported pilot projects on cinema as innovation hubs. The interesting aspect is that the first pilot project the Commission launched was launched in the pre-COVID era. And in that pre-COVID era, the way of innovation, the kind of projects that we were supporting, were really projects that were seeing this innovation in the art house cinema as a way to going out from the center to the periphery of the European Union. And it was very interesting because the core of this first batch of projects that we received were really aiming at finding a new social cohesion, a new social dimension of the cinema going. Of course, the pandemic came and completely delayed, if not blocked, and changed completely the nature of this project. But the second one instead was really focusing on trying to look at innovation from a technological point of view and really seeing cinemas cooperating with new forms of dissemination. Both aspects are relevant in this post-COVID world. We are very, very happy that the Network of Europa Cinema has taken on board the gist of these pilot projects with their Cooperate to Innovate project within their network. And we're very much looking forward to seeing how this experiment will be taking shape within the network. At the same time, it shows that our third pillar, technological transformation for innovation, which is stated out in the Media and Audiovisual Action Plan presented by Commissioner Breton last December 2020, needs to be focusing on innovation and needs to be adapted to ensure that cinemas continue to play their fundamental role that they have been playing during the whole history of European cinematographies. Audience development at the same time needs to make full profit of this innovation experiences, but at the same time we cannot not have innovation without diversity. And when we take the idea of diversity further, we see that diversity applies to several aspects of the audiovisual ecosystem. Firstly, by means of dissemination, clearly, with all the possibility of fruition of audiovisual works. Second, outreach to with new forms of engagement with the audience and new publics, moving away from the idea that art house is the only privilege of a very small community, but the need to really make it an alive cultural experience and social experience also for groups that are not necessarily the first target of art house cinemas or art house works, and finally move away from this sort of dichotomy between art house and large public and make it really a large public for art house movies. And finally, working on the content that is produced in European in the European audiovisual ecosystem. We need a content that speaks to a larger audience. We need a content that reflects the diversity of European societies and reflects the debate that has permeated European societies during the pandemic, but also before the pandemic, a debate that brings about the fact that we don't have a dominant culture, but we have many cultures in Europe, not only in terms of language, but also in terms of groups and diversity in terms of ethnicity, racial and sexual preferences. So a very broad idea of diversity that we are trying to introduce as a horizontal priority in the entire Creative Europe program. This is one of the novelty of the Creative Europe program 2021-2027. It is probably, as you can imagine, one of the difficult things because the perception of diversity is very different among the 27 member states, and therefore we don't go with a normative approach, but we are encouraging diversity by making an obligation, making for all applicants an obligation to provide a diversity strategy for their companies and to promote diversity in their choices. Clearly, for the same token, we're not intervening on content because this is not the idea of the Creative Europe program. We're supporting an industry. We're not imposing content or choices in the content. But yet, we feel that if we promote diversity at the level of the companies that are engaging with the Creative Europe program, we will ultimately reach to a production that reflects the same diversity that we are encouraging within the companies. Again, last but not least, we have also started in Cannes a campaign on diversity behind the camera. This is again part of the media and audiovisual action plan, and we're aiming and having this diversity campaign running throughout December. Our aim is to bring about and highlight the diversity of the talents that are working on the audiovisual ecosystem. Again, professions that are behind the camera, professions that are normally not open for women in particular, but also for people coming with a diverse background. It's a promotional campaign. We intend to be this as an awareness campaign. It's a starting point. As it is a starting point, our horizontal priority for the Creative Europe media program, we will see where we get there. It's a start. Again, it's an incentive. It's not a normative approach, but we feel that we need to take the challenge that the sector has brought about in the last years. I'm eager to listen to you. I regret not to be in Venice today, and I'm looking forward to further exchange with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Maria Silvia. I think you've given us some food for thought. Thank you very much. Mathis, it was just said you cannot have innovation without diversity. From your perspective, before we get into sort of the nitty-gritty of what that can mean for exhibition or what some of the issues are for exhibition, I know this is something you're quite passionate about. Could you give us your thoughts on how that is reflected essentially in what you do?
Thank you, Nick. Maybe to start with something that Maria Silvia just pointed out. We are not only going through a pandemic, which is sadly not over yet, but it's a whole upheaval, and the pandemic has only, I would say, speeded up a sort of a time in which we live, which increased a lot of changes that we were already seeing before the pandemic actually hit us. And it's interesting because as I've moved to the European Film Academy since January, you know, the European Film Academy being also set up and launched in a time of, I would say, big upheaval, which was 88-89, in which Europe was basically reunited, which was, of course, linked to a lot of, I would say, excitement and positive outlook. And now, almost 35 years later, we're in another big change in which we're actually in a very different kind of upheaval, which is much more linked to fear for what the future will bring. And I think it's the right time, and linking that to what Maria Silvia just said and the topic of this panel, it's a great moment for an organization like the European Film Academy to sort of reposition itself and say, listen, from a moment of excitement and bringing everybody together, it's also a moment to address that fear and to see how, through innovation, and I think the only way of doing that is in a diverse way, making sure that we find solutions together with others, not only the Academy itself. So I think innovation, first of all, has to do with, also mentioned before, and I know many people in the audience are very active in that, with projects that really find different ways and new ways and don't shy away from being quite radical in that when it comes to reaching out to audiences. Now, we speak in every panel about reaching out to audiences, but if it comes to like how we really do that, we tend to sort of act in quite a, I would say, classical way of doing that through cinemas, doing that through events we organize and so on, which is great, but I think we should do that much broader. I'm very happy personally that actually in the program I think now proposed and all of us are applying for new Creative Europe support funding this year, where it's been made very, very clear that sustainability and diversity are very pivotal things to pay attention to. So I think coming back to very concrete actions when it comes to the European Film Academy, there are a couple of things. I mean, first of all, the European Film Academy will start from this year onwards very much more and actually only looking at audience development projects and film education projects. So apart from organizing the European Film Awards every year and celebrating each other about how great we are and what great films are coming from Europe, also very important, we'll continue to do that. But it will be a year-round program from, let's say, 1 or 2 years from now onwards, focusing on film education. For example, by setting up a European Film Club, which will make films available to young audiences, let's say teenagers, that will have access to films online. And through that, other events in cinemas and in schools can be organized. We do that, of course, together with partners that already do that, like European Film Factory. We're talking together with the members of AFAT, for example, how we can set that up. And we're obviously talking to the rights holders, so the sales agents and the producers in Europe, because all of them should be involved. And I think innovation in that sense is one big thing. We're very good in Europe at finding national solutions and then convincing the others that we should copy the solutions in one country, which might work in many cases. But I think in some cases, and that's where I also see quite a strong role for the European Film Academy in the next years, to unite and bring people together if new things are being set up, instead of going for the German or French, Spanish or Italian solution, or many of the others. Last but not least, I think, when it comes to innovation, it's important talking about audience development to really bring films to where people are and where they are watching films, and not to force them to go to places that we think are the right ones. I know this is not always an easy topic because we have built up an infrastructure in the past 100 years of how films and where films should be watched and by whom. All the promotion measures, all the financing measures, all the marketing and advertising measures are all set up to make that happen, and it works, I would say, quite well. But if we'd really like to change how cinema is working and how also art house cinema will survive, which I think is a goal that we all have, including at the Academy, we should make sure that we reach other people. And I think, as we've seen that already, and again, has been speeded up in the past 2 years, we just see that there's a lot of people that live in the countries in which we live in Europe that are not going to the cinemas, and we don't know what they're watching. And actually, if you would ask them, I think they would say, that's not for me. And I think by joining forces in reaching out, Maria Silvia just mentioned already, obviously, a great campaign that was launched in Cannes with the collective 50-50, focusing on gender equality. That's a first step, and normally from that, other initiatives follow. But I think we should, including, look at diversity in the levels mentioned, which is not only ethnic and racial, sexual orientation or gender equality, obviously, but also when it comes to age and when it comes to religion. We shouldn't forget that a large part in Europe of people living and working in Europe are not from a Christian Judeo background, and we should more focus on that, I think, as well, to include them. And age-wise, coming back also to the youth audiences that we'd like to involve. It's not only the people to see films, but also to have young people watch and talk about films. Like an example, the Young Audience Award that the European Film Academy is organizing, to the Lux Audience Award, in which with a project like 27 Times Cinema, which is here the Giornata degli Autori, a collaboration also with Europa Cinema and the European Parliament. These are important projects to bring films to where they belong, because they're promoted by people in that age group and not by us saying, listen, you should actually watch this film because it's an interesting film. So it's a broad pan, it's a broad thing, but these are things I think the Academy can play a role in together with other partners.
Sure, sure. And I think Maria Silvia mentioned in very simple terms just the need for art house cinema to become less elitist, as it were, and to become more inclusive in that sense. Now, Bruno, since Mathis mentioned EFAD and mentioned funding, I thought maybe you could give us even some sort of practical information in a time of recovery. It's important to know how to work the funding. So I think you may have some interesting information to provide us about that.
Thank you so much. Grazie per questo invito. Gli organizzatori mi hanno detto che è possibile anche parlare in italiano perché avete tutti la possibilità di una traduzione. E sì, come diceva giustamente Nick, dire, intanto io qui sono anche in rappresentanza degli EFATS, che è l'organizzazione che raccoglie tutte le principali agenzie di sostegno pubblico al cinema e audiovisivo. Saluto Julie Jean Regnault, che è la segretaria generale, e saluto anche Monsieur Fournet, che è della CNC, che è il nostro ovviamente partner all'interno degli EFAD. Per noi è un onore e un privilegio lavorare anche insieme a SICAE, perché come dire, condividiamo la stessa filosofia che in modo molto semplice si può tradurre in un concetto che è il sostegno pubblico alle sale indipendenti è di per sé uno strumento di tutela e di valorizzazione della diversità culturale. Per noi, come diciamo, agenzie pubbliche, la distribuzione in sala resta una priorità evidente, e per tutte le agenzie pubbliche evidentemente è evidente che nel periodo pandemico abbiamo dovuto ricorrere a una serie di eccezioni, di deroghe, di proroghe, ma adesso che le sale hanno riaperto, in Italia hanno riaperto dal 26 aprile se non erro, siamo nuovamente stiamo reintroducendo nuovamente tutta una serie di incentivi e di premialità per garantire un'uscita in esclusiva in sala. Di qui un dibattito che c'è anche in altri paesi, a cominciare anche dalla Francia, sulla riforma anche della cronologia dei media, quindi delle finestre, alla luce della presenza sempre più prepotente delle uscite di film e di serie sulle piattaforme. Il secondo elemento che condividiamo come Italia e come agenzie pubbliche è che il sostegno pubblico alle sale indipendenti, che di fatto è presente in tutti gli schemi di sostegno, ovviamente con varie approcci e metodologie, resta comunque un cardine, un pillar delle logiche di finanziamento pubblico, ripeto, come elemento di tutela della diversità culturale. Per fare l'esempio italiano, mi chiedevi qualche dato, nel periodo pandemico 2020-2021 soltanto come fondi di emergenza rivolti alle sale cinematografiche, quindi stiamo parlando di ristori, abbiamo messo a disposizione delle sale 162 milioni di euro, incluse anche sale all'aperto. E all'inizio di quest'anno abbiamo anche riformato il nostro sistema tax credit, che prevede due linee di sostegno alle sale, una per incentivare la programmazione in sala, soprattutto evidentemente anche di film art house, film indipendenti, film difficili come le chiamiamo noi, e uno che è arrivato a 40 milioni di euro, e questa è una il tax credit è stato elevato da un'aliquota del 20% a un'aliquota del 25%. Quindi abbiamo tratto una lezione dalla pandemia in periodo emergenziale e abbiamo stabilizzato l'innalzamento di questa aliquota. Mentre invece per il tax credit alla ristrutturazione delle sale, quindi la modernizzazione delle sale, abbiamo nel 2021 un budget di 25 milioni di euro. Quindi insomma risorse importanti. Accanto poi a risorse destinate ad esempio esclusivamente ai cinema d'essai, che in Italia sono una quota molto rilevante del nostro parco sale, abbiamo un budget fisso di 5 milioni di euro. A questo, tanto per darvi un'idea appunto dell'importanza, della rilevanza e della centralità che il nostro sostegno pubblico a livello nazionale, ripeto, poi condiviso da tutte le agenzie nazionali, abbiamo anche grazie alla legge cinema del 2016 abbiamo anche messo in piedi un piano straordinario. All'epoca lo chiamavamo straordinario, evidentemente adesso lo era ancora di più, quinquennale, e le risorse che vi anticipavo prima ne abbiamo messe sul campo altri 120 milioni di euro per il ripristino di sale inattive, per la costruzione di nuove sale, per l'ammodernamento e l'ampliamento delle strutture cinematografiche, sempre con una logica non omogenea, ma con delle premialità e delle differenziazioni che riguardano la tipologia di sala, quindi la dimensione della sala, l'ubicazione della stessa, quindi con una priorità per esempio per le sale storiche, perché noi in Italia sono quelle antecedenti al 1980, e con una premialità anche per il tipo di programmazione che viene effettuata all'interno di queste sale, proprio perché evidentemente ci rendiamo conto che per promuovere la diversità occorre l'incentivo pubblico. Terzo ed ultimo elemento, lo citava anche il collega della Film Academy, a nostro avviso sia diciamo, come EFAD che come diciamo, Sistema Italia, crediamo che la Film Education, noi abbiamo un piano nazionale Cinema Immagini per la Scuola che sta per riprendere il via questo autunno, crediamo che la Film Education sia uno strumento formidabile per avvicinare le nuove generazioni ad apprezzare il cinema in sala. E riteniamo che le sale cinematografiche già lo fanno, ma pensiamo che debba essere diciamo, fatto un salto di qualità, le sale possano svolgere un ruolo fondamentale, non soltanto come luogo di fruizione, di consumo, ma proprio come attori che coinvolgono i territori. Molte sale, qui so che al training si cae, ci sono anche esercenti italiani, ma immagino anche altri esercenti europei, molte sale già lo fanno egregiamente. Io credo, in particolare qui diciamo, do una suggestione, che le sale, nell'ambito soprattutto della film education, dovrebbero creare delle alleanze con il mondo del patrimonio. Il mondo del patrimonio intendo le cineteche. La valorizzazione del nostro patrimonio audiovisivo digitalizzato per la fruizione in sala da destinare in particolare alle giovani generazioni. Secondo me questa è una sfida che l'esercizio dovrebbe cogliere, l'esercizio soprattutto Art House, per rafforzare ancora di più le proprie politiche di fidelizzazione e di engagement dei propri utenti. Noi, come dicevo, abbiamo più o meno il 70-75% delle strutture che hanno riaperto e la cosa straordinaria, interessante ma non sorprendente, è che a fine aprile, quando le sale hanno riaperto, sono state soprattutto le sale d'essai, sono state soprattutto i piccoli cinema a riaprire, dimostrando maggiore resilienza rispetto alle altre strutture che ovviamente poi hanno seguito nelle aperture, con degli esempi fantastici anche di code infinite nel primo giorno dell'apertura, proprio anche simbolicamente come elemento di grande diciamo, voglia di ritornare ad apprezzare il cinema in sala. Abbiamo lanciato una campagna di promozione, 2,5 milioni per uno spot che stiamo diciamo, da pochi giorni dappertutto, in televisione, nei social media, proprio per comunicare non soltanto l'apertura delle sale, ma comunicare soprattutto la sicurezza delle sale in questo periodo, diciamo, ci auguriamo, sempre più post-pandemico. Grazie.
Grazie, grazie. Grazie Bruno. So Bruno gave us a very interesting overview of soft money in Italy to support the art house cinema sector. Sonia, in the U.S., as far as I know, there are comparable types of support for art house cinemas. Yet. I think art house cinemas still exist.
a few of them do.
And one of them being Film Forum, which has had an interesting summer, as I understand it. There was an example of a film called La Piscine from 1969 that made the New York Times wrote about how well it was doing at Film Forum. But aside from that, I just wanted to ask you about some of the things that have surfaced. For one being the correlation between art house cinema and a sort of elitist aspect of cinema, which I think is something that needs to change. The other being youth audiences, attracting youth audiences. I'm curious about what the audience base is at Film Forum. So yeah, these are a few things I wanted to ask you about.
Sure. It's all related in a way, this idea that there isn't really a pipeline of this kind of funding for art house cinemas in the U.S. because cinema is not considered an art, I think, in the same way as it is in Europe. We have a lot of envy for the support that cinema and cinemas get as an actual art. So, for instance, if you're applying for foundation funding or something like that, there's categories for museums, theater, music, movies, movie houses, not so much. So it's kind of an ironic idea that movies are not considered an art, and yet we have this elitist perception at the same time. So we find ourselves in this odd little middle place, both in terms of funding and in terms of audience outreach. So it's really this threading a needle, strange place to try to keep an art house cinema going in the U.S. And certainly there are, but any of you who've been to New York or been around New York, for instance, Film Forum has been around for 51 years, which is very unusual. Many art house cinemas have come and gone over the years. As far as youth audiences, well, as far as the age group is concerned, I will say that business has been pretty good since we reopened at 33% capacity in April and full in June. This phenomenon of this film, this French film, La Piscine, we're as surprised, delighted, been perplexed. It's in its 16th week, I think, which is incredible and unusual. These Times pieces have given it almost like it's a completely new film after 13 weeks. And I will say that the classics, we have two screens. We have classic films and we have premiere films, new films. Overall, the classics have been doing better and at the box office. And I think what we're seeing is both that our older audiences and people want to see comfort fare, right, after the pandemic. Many of our new films, like many of the films you're seeing here, the documentaries on important things, they're not escapist films, right? They're about genocide and the Holocaust and all kinds of things that are very difficult. And people are not flocking to come see these movies. People are flocking to see Alain Delon half naked for two and a half hours on screen with Jane Birkin and Romy Schneider. And it's a delectable, I mean, that's really my explanation for why, you know, that we are post-pandemic. People are we're not post-pandemic. We're still mid-pandemic. It's a very difficult time to kind of sell challenging independent film, frankly. A quick thing about young people. Our demographic does skew older, for sure. I think we did an audience study about 5 or 6 years ago that said our average patron was something like 53 years old. So this is something I am specifically very focused on and trying to work on. We have an advisory committee made up of people who are specifically younger than myself and all of our programmers, which is to say under 40, to help us think about that. I was thinking about this word innovation, which to me feels very intimidating, because part of why Film Forum has, I think, stayed the course and been able to survive for 50 years is because it's a place that tends to be very, very focused on what it does and doesn't try to start new programs all the time. We are theatrical exhibitors. We show classics and premieres on four screens. That's what we do. We don't do a lot of other things. Like some cinemas in New York are part of larger arts organizations like Brooklyn Academy of Music, Film Society at Lincoln Center. They're multi-art centers. We do one thing, and I think that's part of how we're able to be efficient and survive. So when I think of innovation, I think of very kind of small, concrete things. For example, I have a background in college education. I'm also a college professor. So we have sort of beefed up or put some time and energy into our intern program. So we have we spend time really doing outreach, trying to get students to spend their semester working for us, learning about art house cinema, and we sort of quiz them about what would make someone their age come and see these films. They do tech screenings for us, so they watch all of our films. They help us with social media, and we hope that they go back to their schools and they tell their fellow classmates about this place, because I think a lot of students don't know about art house cinema. So it's a small innovation, but it's a concrete thing that that we're trying to do, and that's sort of how we think about a lot of these questions of audience outreach, whether it's racial identity or sexual identity or age. And these are, again, all things that we're thinking about very deliberately. I think in the Black Lives Matter, post-Black Lives Matter era, this kind of effort has always been on the map, but it's very inefficient to focus on these things. It's much sort of easier not to focus on these things, and so we're really taking the time to work on these things, which are not easy at all. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Sonia. Christian, two things I wanted to ask you. One pertains to innovation in sort of nitty-gritty strategic terms for the exhibition, as an exhibitor. Different ways of programming films, different ways of reaching out to the audience. Basically that. Different strategies, okay? Which I think is something that that is there. I think it's one of the themes at the moment, okay? And the other is, essentially, to put it very simplistically, different kinds of movies, okay? What we saw in Cannes, we saw a genre film, Titane, win the Palme d'Or. Here in Venice, we have quite a few genre films. Sonia just mentioned that people aren't necessarily that keen for films that have too much gravitas at the moment. But that doesn't mean that they have to see crap movies, essentially, okay? Anyway, these two things, these two themes. One is sort of as an exhibitor, the practical aspects of getting people back into movie theaters, and the other is whether we're seeing a change and a differentiation. I wouldn't call it a diversification, but a differentiation in terms of the types of films that might be appealing to audiences and possibly to younger audiences as well.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. So first of all, I share the thought of Sonia said we are still mid-pandemic. So in most countries, still we have social or sanitary measurements, we have still distance rules. It's still part of our audience is kind of scared of going back to theaters, to cinemas, so still we don't know about the next months. If I look in a Germany market, you asked about my experience in Berlin. I'm doing also 14 art house cinemas. So the restart was quite good. We opened again in July and had, even if we can sell only 50% of the capacity, we had more audience than in July 2018 and just minus 10% compared to 2017. That means there's also a good need or a huge need for public spaces, for theaters to go back. And so I know it's a rocky way ahead as we are still mid-pandemic. And maybe for the moment now we have some ideas what changed. We know more since 1 year before as we've been here and hope we won't be closed again. And then it became different. But still we don't know. So what you asked about innovation, it's also what Sonia said. I guess innovation in theaters, in art house theaters, usually that's an everyday process. As cinemas are open every day a year, and we have every week new films, and usually we are not competitors. Maybe in my city, even art house theaters can be competitors, But in general, we can learn from each other. And I guess that might be the biggest threat, but in my opinion, also the biggest opportunity. As we live in a more globalized market with a lot of market power concentration, especially with the internet giants, but also within our markets, in studios, in multiplex chains. But then on the other side, where market concentrates, there's room for niches. It's a big threat to us, but also when I go here, and you talked about Cannes, what would be with movies like Parasite, like Nomadland? Would be six movies discovered by that many people then with a release in theaters? I don't think so. So I guess kind of our work is to be back to the roots, and that was always audience development, and especially if it comes to art house cinemas, it always was diversity. Diversity in sense of content, but also looking for these niches, and this is diversity. And I guess that was also the power of the European movies, and maybe in the US, independent film productions. So I guess we need in future, and that's more an analog approach, but we need a more holistic approach from the creative sector to the cinemas. I guess that's one step. But also, I guess, and I guess at the beginning also Silvia Maria Gatta told it, but also Matthijs, of course the market changed. And that in many ways. So our film market changed. Of course, people have maybe today more streaming subscriptions, and they have an even bigger power within the market. We see it in collapsing windows, that change. We see it in behavior. Even the elitist older audience know how to stream and book and order tickets, buy tickets online. So, of course, we have to adopt. And then what said, it's also about technology. And I guess for Arthouse here, this was always about more of the story than about the technical effect on screen. But our strength always was the communication with our audience. And I guess for future is curation is key. But the fund for it, the foundation for it, is a strong collaboration with our audience. And of course, even our audience, and even if they are 60 plus, maybe not every one of them, but most of them use their mobile phone to look what's in theaters and get information about. So it's time for us to innovate in this field. And I guess, and if you come back to audience development, I guess we underestimate, but we both know how difficult it is. Audience development is hard work. It's not just saying here and now my next movie, I have a movie maybe for students, or I do a movie, a first movie for underrepresented people in my neighborhood. That means really work on it. That weeks work on it in curation, the programming. It means also make some marketing about it. And, of course, they must trust us. And I guess a big chance, and I guess it's the same for journalism in my point of view, I guess if we do it right as cinemas, and especially as art house cinema, we must be the most trusted source for watching movies. We have so much movies and series we can watch online. It's good, it's nice, but is it really? And so I guess it's on us to act responsible. And I guess it counts today even more, and I guess it counts especially for a young audience. We have to take on our role as a public space for public debates even more and say, watch, maybe we screen one day Dune, and it's a great movie. I watched it this morning, and it will work in multiplexes and also in art house cinema. But you talked about Titan, and I love this movie. And it's a big event, and we all know the usual elitist art house spectators are not maybe the first address for a movie like this. So we have to open up for such movies. I guess we can't go back in our niche and stay in our niche, but also I'm convinced about that even today, cinemas reach by far more non-academics and also young people than any other art. So we shouldn't make us more weak than we are. We have to fight for it. And I guess that's, in my opinion, it's a mix of technical innovation, but also in sense of we have to look what changed and we have to adjust as soon or as quick as possible to these changes. And so I'm optimistic. And then, yes, I'm optimistic also thanks to some politicians on a local, on a national, on a European level. They do a lot to preserve cinema. And I guess we also have to fight in the United States for it. Because I guess if we lose art house cinemas or cinemas at all, we would lose an art form, and we can't risk it.
Fantastic. Okay. Okay. I think we've covered quite a lot of ground. I'm wondering if there's anyone in the audience who would like to say something or ask a question. Okay, we have someone over there. Can we give them a microphone?
Hello, Tamara, Eichenlund, the magazine. I have a question in particular about diversity. So we all understand that diversity is very important, both in films, on screens, and in terms of audiences. What is your opinion, how to best approach that? I mean, thinking of diversity targets, do they work? And how to approach filmmaking in terms of, okay, do I set up some targets? How do I produce this film? Or do I set up some targets? How do I allocate tickets to different groups? How to approach, in more practical terms, the question of diversity? Thank you.
And who is the question directed to specifically?
No one in particular. Who feels brave today?
Okay, does anyone want to? Okay, Mathis, go ahead.
I think it's a very important question. I think we could fill a whole week talking and discussing it, which is not an answer to your question, but I think in every level, in every field of filmmaking, whether it is in the range of developing ideas and supporting the development of projects, to funding them, to distributing it, to the selection for film festivals and so on, are many levels that needs to be addressed. And I think we shouldn't wait until the first ones do that, which is sometimes the case. We still sort of look up to a festival or a person or an organization that starts doing it, gets a lot of press, and then we start copying it. But I think it's better to say, listen, why don't we join forces, include a lot of people that have not been included so far, including on panels like this, festivals like this, and then really speed that process up. And I think there's quite some interesting initiatives going on in Europe right now. I think also that the people that like to be included are getting more louder and more visible as well, so we should not look away from that. But again, like to answer a question like that, I think we should look what happens from today onwards until next year in Venice and see what kind of initiatives are actually happening right now and being set up. And I think actually compared to 1 or 2 years ago, that's absolutely already an improvement, even though it's just the beginning.
Okay, thank you, Mathis.
I would just like to add, so of course it's about curation, but maybe an example from my company, York Kinogruppe. So we are doing a lot of in social media, but also digital customer communication, even before pandemic. And maybe the group that's most linked to us is the queer community. And the second one are the women, because they are all very, and that's changed in society, they are aware of the situation, and they look who gives us space, and I guess that's the future of the young generation. They expect their cultural institution to act responsible. So it's not just say, we love queer people, because people know, do you really love queer people? Or are we really acting like this? And I guess this has to go hand in hand. And on the second hand, I'm with Matthijs. It's easy to say, and often on film festival, everybody agrees in more diversity. But how to really reach this audience? And I really also share this thought of Maria Silvia Gatta, because I say we are definitely not elitist. That's not my approach. I want to be with my art house cinemas as mainstream as possible for my idea or our idea of art house. But of course, it misses films, and especially from not academics, it misses topics about these people. Also, what Matthai said about different religion, about people with different background. And I guess that's really needs, and that's what I meant before with an holistic approach. If I don't have then good movies, or not just any movie, then of course I can't go on with this work.
Can I add something?
Sure, absolutely.
You asked specifically about targets, and I would say, you know, we run a business, so it's a very specific thing. I feel that there are certain things you can control and certain things you really can't. We can do everything we in our power, but we can't ultimately control sort of who walks in the door, or we can't control what films are being made this year, by whom, or whether we're going to be able to get those films because maybe they went commercial, or, you know, there are just a lot of things out of our control. What I feel target-wise we maybe can control is our hiring. That's the one thing that I might change my mind about this, just to be clear. It's like I'm thinking in process. We're all in process. But it just seems to me that the decision about who is in the room when you're making decisions about these things, about programming, about what other organizations you'll be partnering with to do outreach, about messaging, who's in the room, that matters. And I think the rest of it can only grow from there. So to me, when we're thinking about who's actually involved in the operations, in the decision-making of the organization, that's something, in terms of targets, I have in my mind.
Super. That's something we've come up with some concrete answers, I think, which is very interesting. We have another, someone else in... Would like to say something?
Please. Can I speak in French? Is there a translation French? Okay, thank you. Oui, je suis Béatrice Boursier du syndicat des salles de cinéma Art et Essai en France, mais aussi je suis secrétaire générale du collectif 50-50. Et merci Mathis d'avoir souligné le travail du collectif. Pour parler d'outils concrets, effectivement, je rejoins complètement vos avis et je pense que nous avons tous notre part à chaque niveau pour atteindre améliorer la diversité, que ce soit au niveau des créateurs, évidemment, des screenplayers, des réalisateurs et des décideurs qui sont soit les producteurs, les chaînes de télévision, les financeurs, etc., et les festivals qui vont montrer un certain nombre de films, plus de films de femmes ou de films d'origine diverse. Et c'est pour ça qu'on a, avec le collectif 50-50, fait signer une charte de parité, de diversité à 150 festivals maintenant dans le monde, dont évidemment Venise, des premiers Cannes. Mais on a créé un outil aussi parce qu'on pense effectivement que plus il y aura de diversité dans les films qui seront créés par des personnes diverses et choisies par des personnes diverses, plus évidemment les jeunes pourront aussi être concernés, et la diversité, enfin les personnes de la diversité aussi pourront être concernées par des histoires différentes. Donc on a créé un outil qui s'appelle la Bible 50-50, où chaque femme, déjà, puis chaque personne qui s'estime discriminée, parce qu'on peut pas, évidemment, le défenseur des droits empêche, évidemment, de comptabiliser de manière ethnique les personnes. Donc toutes les personnes qui s'estiment discriminées peuvent s'inscrire dans cette Bible de professionnels, c'est un annuaire en ligne, et les femmes aussi, à tous les postes de la production, tous les postes techniques et tous les postes artistiques. Donc voilà, c'est un premier outil pour pouvoir employer plus de personnes quand on a des projets, soit des femmes, soit des personnes issues de la diversité. C'est un premier outil, mais bien sûr, bon, on en propose d'autres, et on a été partenaire aussi du évidemment de la campagne Caractère dont parlait Maria Silva Gatta pour montrer des profils et des portraits de femmes dans tous les métiers techniques pour être aussi inspirantes pour toutes les jeunes femmes qui voudraient avoir ces métiers techniques.
Thank you. That's another concrete something else concrete that has surfaced on what is otherwise just a sort of generic topic. Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to? Please. Can we get a microphone? She's okay.
Merci. Je vais profiter du français, moi aussi, pour dire évidemment mon accord avec ce qui a été précédemment dit sur la diversité et l'offre. Je voulais dire que nos salles ont une double offre au public. C'est à la fois les films, mais aussi nos lieux, nos salles. Et c'est vrai que la pandémie a privé le public, pas tant que ça des films, puisque les films ont été présents sur différentes offres, plateformes, etc., mais les ont privés de nos salles. Et je pense qu'aujourd'hui, ce que disait tout à l'heure Christian, sur la façon dont on retrouve aujourd'hui, je suis exploitant moi aussi, la façon dont on retrouve le public dans nos salles, on sent qu'il y a ce désir de la salle, peut-être qui vient de cette privation de 4 mois, de ces lieux où précisément on ne mesurait peut-être pas la chance que l'on avait de l'offre qu'il nous faisait. C'est vrai que venir dans ces lieux, c'est entendre des langues, c'est voir des films de toute diversité, c'est voir des films de toute communauté, c'est mélanger les communautés, c'est des endroits où il y a des débats, et c'est des endroits d'accueil. Et je pense aujourd'hui que, pour revenir aussi à ce que disait Maria Silvia tout à l'heure, nous avons cette chance à la fois de toujours être des défenseurs de la diversité, l'art et essai, nous, Europa Cinéma, tous ensemble, mais aussi des défenseurs de lieux, aujourd'hui, de lieux qui ont une importance dans les villes sociétales, qui savent en plus aujourd'hui utiliser les réseaux sociaux, les moyens de communication, qui sont souvent utilisés, évidemment très souvent utilisés par les jeunes. Donc cette chance-là, effectivement, il faut qu'on la cultive. Ces lieux et ces moyens de communication s'adressent à des jeunes, ils doivent être des lieux qui doivent être accueillants et qui doivent faire des offres qui les concerne. Voilà, je pense que c'est une chance peut-être que l'on peut tirer de cette privation de plusieurs mois de fermeture des salles de cinéma.
Thank you very much. Anyone else?
Nick, could I okay. say something?
Yes,
like
of course.
Shorting.
Please.
Thanks for both the reactions. I think the interesting thing is there is, I just mentioned it when the lady who asked the first question asked, so what can we do, what can we start doing? And what Sonia just said, you know, we should listen to what or look at to who's in the room actually when decisions are being taken on every level. There is the initiative of the New Dawn Fund, which is focusing on underrepresented filmmakers in Europe, which is still in the process of being set up. Biro Bayer, for example, is in the room here, who's helping to set that up with a couple of other European film funds. I think that's a very important step because there will be money flowing basically to people from underrepresented communities, as we nicely call it. To make films. And last but not least, I've been hearing it myself, and I'm guilty of it myself as well. We keep congratulating ourselves as, I would say, you know, like non-underrepresented people that we have been doing diversity quite well in the past decades and so on, which is, of course, we've been doing our best. But I think if we would ask anybody of any underrepresented group or of color in this room if that's enough, everybody would probably say, no, it's not enough. So, like, all the compliments we give to each other are great, and I think we should go on, but we should also realize that all these compliments are given by a specific group of people.
Salima. Please.
Oui, merci. Je vais remettre encore une couche sur la diversité. Moi, je suis très sensible parce que je suis justement issue de cette diversité dans la diversité européenne. Et je crois, pour reprendre ce que disait Sonia, de regarder qui est dans la salle. Quand je vais au cinéma, je regarde justement qui est dans la salle. Et je vois qu'il y a souvent une corrélation entre soit les sujets qui sont proposés, qui sont les sujets des personnes peut-être que l'on vise, soit des acteurs, tout simplement. mettez, alors je vais parler de français, mais mettez Omar Sy, Leila Bekhti, Rosh Dizem, Kad Merad, Reda Kateb dans une production, et vous voyez tout de suite que vous avez une diversité, du moins une diversité que l'on peut trouver en France. Donc il y a une vraie corrélation entre aussi les acteurs, c'est-à-dire qu'on va aussi au cinéma parce que on s'y retrouve, on voit une partie de sa vie. On a aussi des gens qui nous ressemblent. Donc je crois que c'est aussi ça auquel il faudrait faire attention pour travailler sur l'inclusion, en tout cas l'inclusion devant la caméra. Derrière la caméra, c'est encore une autre problématique. J'avais fini.
OK. Thank you, Salima. Do any of the panelists want to say anything else? Okay. I think we're basically going to wrap it up. Salima, though, that was your closing remark, correct? Was there something else you wanted to say?
Ah non, c'était pas ça, j'en ai encore un peu plus. Désolée pour ceux qui voulaient s'enfuir.
Vous allez rester quelques minutes encore. You've been there all this time and I want to make sure you have an opportunity to say everything you want to say.
Non. Alors, j'ai la lourde tâche de conclure. Donc moi, je voulais juste dire déjà que j'avais plaisir, je crois que ça zoa, d'être là avec vous ce soir. Je suis vraiment très honorée. Donc je suis députée européenne, donc je suis membre du Parlement européen et je suis coordinatrice pour mon groupe des Verts pour la commission culture et éducation au Parlement. Alors, je vais réagir brièvement et puis donner surtout une perspective un peu plus politique au sujet de la relance du secteur cinématographique en Europe et des questions de diversité. Il a toujours été clair, et ça je crois qu'on va pas, déjà à partir de la première vague de cette pandémie, que le secteur culturel est l'un de ceux qui ont le plus ouvert en Europe comme partout dans le monde. Ça je crois ça a fait consensus. Si certains secteurs ont su s'adapter à cette nouvelle réalité, faite de confinement, de fermeture de locaux publics, voire de passes sanitaires, c'est un petit tacle pour la France en ce moment. Je pense notamment au succès obtenu par les grosses plateformes de streaming et de vidéos à la demande, notamment par abonnement. Au contraire des autres secteurs qui ont subi des pertes énormes. C'est le cas du cinéma, avec la mise à l'arrêt totale de toute la chaîne de production et de distribution, puis nous en avons parlé. Depuis le début de la pandémie, avec mes collègues dans la commission parlementaire culture, nous avons immédiatement exigé des institutions européennes ainsi que des États membres que nous ne perdions pas de vue les défis auxquels sont confrontés les artistes et les travailleurs du secteur culturel pendant la pandémie et afin que nous y remédions au mieux de nos capacités. On a assisté à une mobilisation de ressources quand même sans précédent en faveur de cette relance des secteurs créatifs et culturels. Et en septembre 2020, le Parlement européen, peut-être que vous ne le savez pas, a voté une résolution sur la relance culturelle de l'Europe qui invite la Commission européenne, dont nous avons eu une personne au début, et les États membres à réserver au secteur de la culture et de la création au moins 2% de la facilité pour la reprise et la résilience consacrée à la relance. Bon, cette demande a aussi fortement été appuyée par la société civile. Les députés, qui sont quand même le représentant des citoyens européens, nous avons relancé cette demande à plusieurs reprises jusqu'à demander à la Commission européenne qu'un engagement en faveur de la culture soit une condition préalable à l'approbation des plans de relance élaborés par les États membres. Et comme dans toutes ces belles histoires, il y a souvent un mais ou un malheureusement, et c'est le cas aujourd'hui, c'est le cas pour ça, ça n'a pas été le cas. Et c'est vraiment dommage, on a des conséquences qui sont plutôt négatives. C'est que des 24 plans soumis par les États membres, seulement la moitié fait mention d'action pour la relance culturelle, ce qui est pour nous en tout cas tout à fait regrettable et décevant. Mais bon, on a continué à travailler au niveau du Parlement. Mais je vous rappelle que les compétences de l'Union européenne sont quand même très limitées. Ce sont des compétences d'appui en matière de culture, mais on a quand même une victoire importante d'Europe Créative, qui est le programme phare de soutien au secteur de la culture. On a presque doublé le budget du nouveau programme pour un total de 2,5 milliards d'euros par rapport à la période précédente. Bon, alors moi je le dis sans cesse, et on le dit sans cesse, il n'y a pas de relance sans un accent sur la culture. Plus encore, il n'y a pas de projet européen, pas d'identité européenne ou conscience européenne sans un accent fort sur la culture. Le cinéma en particulier s'est révélé comme plutôt facilitateur, un des plus importants pour la promotion de la diversité culturelle et linguistique en Europe. En plus de sa valeur économique, puisque c'est celle que l'on fait, que l'on met en avant en premier, cette crise sans précédent du Covid, et vous en avez fait mention, nous a rappelé à toutes et à tous la valeur sociale essentielle de la culture, et notamment des œuvres cinématographiques et des cinémas comme lieu à la fois physique et métaphorique de rencontre. Et monsieur, vous en avez parlé un petit peu de ces lieux où il se passe des choses extraordinaires et qui ont manqué à beaucoup de monde. C'est pour ça que je tiens aujourd'hui à réitérer mon soutien et mon engagement en faveur d'un cinéma européen qui soit diversifié, qu'il s'agisse de la diversité et de la variété des films que l'on présente aux spectateurs et spectatrices, ou la représentation des minorités, des genres, des orientations sexuelles, des personnes en situation de handicap sur l'écran et aussi dans l'ensemble de la chaîne de production. Je vais aller plus vite, parce que je crois que tout le monde s'endort. Non ? Si. Mais qu'il n'y a pas de bruit, c'est que tout le monde s'est endormi même. Alors, par rapport à la diversité, je vais juste vous dire, parce que je crois qu'il y a des gens qui ont beaucoup d'idées là-dessus, c'est que moi, je travaille sur deux sujets très importants, enfin qui me semblent très importants, c'est de développer des stratégies de la diplomatie culturelle. Cette diplomatie qui permet justement de parler et de créer des lieux de paix en utilisant la culture. Et la deuxième chose, c'est que j'étais à l'initiative d'un rapport d'initiative sur la lutte, enfin comment la culture, il y a aussi le sport, les médias, etc., participe à la lutte contre le racisme. Donc je suis preneuse de toutes vos propositions dans ce cadre-là. Je voudrais revenir à tout ce qui a été dit, si je pouvais un peu résumer ce que moi j'ai retenu. J'ai retenu trois mots: durabilité, diversité, inclusion. J'ai retenu trois actions: innover encore, pour répondre à Sonia, éduquer et financer. Éduquer, je crois que c'est très très important. Mon profil, pour ceux qui ont peut-être regardé, c'est que j'étais enseignante. Et en France, on a un programme très important qui s'appelle École et Cinéma, et qui permet justement d'amener à l'école, parce que je crois que le cinéma doit se déplacer vers les écoles. Et c'est très important parce que, en fait, on éduque les jeunes, donc les futurs spectateurs, tout simplement, à une autre forme de cinéma que celle qui est proposée par les blockbusters américains. Désolée, Sonia. Voilà, ben je m'arrête là. Merci.
Okay, thank you very much, Salima. We've covered quite a lot of ground. I've certainly learned a lot, and I thought it was quite an enriching panel. The issues that I think that surfaced, we were able to, you know, delve into them somewhat concretely, which is important. I think Venice is a good place for this. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you, Nick, for moderating this panel, and thank you all for being here with us. I guess it's quite important to think about the future of art house cinemas, and this panel was on behalf of the training of CKA here in Venice, and I guess it's about professionalization, it's about innovation, and it's about networking, what we have to do even more. So thanks for being here with us, and please join us for the cocktails. Thank you.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.